Welcome the one and only. Oh, look, he's right there. Would you welcome Steve Martin?
I think this will be you.
I think I'm happy right here.
You like that one?
Okay.
He's getting over his shyness.
Thank you for that introduction.
Well, it's, you know what I wanted to ask you before we even started, because I'm not sure. We're going to go through a partial list of the great things you've done and achievements, but I didn't know.
Why a partial list?
Because we don't have time to cover it all.
Okay.
Do you have an honorary doctorate or an actual doctorate?
I have an honorary doctorate.
So you are a doctor.
Yeah, but I do honorary surgeries.
Okay.
I attended Long Beach State College, and they gave me an honorary doctorate.
Well,
I don't abuse it. Yeah.
Dr. Steve Martin, as I should have introduced. Well, some people, Steve, would say, here we go. Mm-hmm. We're going to do more promotion for the record.
I don't... it's funny, when it comes to movies, promotion was always a lot of work, because you would get questions like, tell us about the character of George. And you go, well, he's a guy, there's nowhere to go with it. They say, why did you choose this movie? I didn't choose it. I was offered it and I said yes. Promoting, in quotes, an album or music, there's actually something to talk about, that is interesting to me, and, I get excited about it.
And you had a spur-of-the-moment idea, I would assume. As many of your ideas, I would imagine, come to you. They come in a moment, right?
Well, they come over time, or they come spontaneously. Sometimes, when they ask me to, they said, we want to do an ad. And I thought, well, what I really wanted to do was actually have people hear the music. And rather than promote one song, I thought, let's promote them all. And I thought of the old KTEL commercials where they just play song after song after song after song. And I thought, you get a little taste of each song. And so I was sitting at my desk and I got this email. They said, we're going to do an ad. And I said, well, what about this? And I picked up my iPhone and I ad-libbed a KTEL ad into my iPhone and emailed it to them. And about 2 days later, they came back with this. You want to show it?
Yeah,
can we show it? I don't know. This is our
It comes
ad.
To
Here
fruition.
Yeah. It's a premise is, a KTEL ad.
Imagine owning every song from Steve Martin and the Steep Canyon Rangers' new long-awaited album called The Long-Awaited Album. Songs such as Santa Fe.
Little Mama, where you been?
All Night Long.
All Night Long.
And Canadian Girl. And many more, including the hit song Caroline, as well as the hit songs All Night Long, Office Supplies, and Caroline. But only if you act now or later. If you act now or later, you'll get the songs Santa Fe, Bad Night, 14 new songs by the original artist Steve Martin and the Steep Canyon Rangers, including such hits as Santa Fe, The Girl from River Run, and The Strangest Christmas Yet.
And I said to Uncle Bob, if you want to close your robe.
And for this one offer only, not included are Yesterday by the Beatles, The Shape of You by Ed Sheeran, and That's What I Like by Bruno Mars. Remember, you won't get Yesterday by the Beatles.
Yesterday. Oh, my darling.
The Shape of You by Ed Sheeran.
I'm in love with the shape of you. I'm in love with the shape of you.
And That's What I Like by Bruno Mars.
That's what I like. Lucky for you, that's what I like.
Instead, you'll get such hits by Steve Martin and the Steep Canyon Rangers as Nights in the Lab.
Nights in the Lab.
On the Water. And that's not all. If you act now, you'll also get Shrink Wrap and a Paper Sleeve. That's Steve Martin and the Steep Canyon Rangers' new album, the long-awaited album. Just call 7393-7502, 8350-3030, or write Post Office Box 839-0393-8389-3845, Garmin Avenue, Chillicothe, Garden.
That's what I like. That's what I like.
And when I first sent them the little voiceover tape, they said, well, it kind of sounds like a cheap recording. I said, yeah, so did the KTEL record.
Right. That's actually great audio quality compared to some of the albums I got from KTEL. Let's start with the Steep Canyon Rangers.
Mm-hmm. I met them.
That's the question.
I was with, before I was married to my now wife, we took, she would vacation with her family in North Carolina, and I was invited to go. And she said, well, there's a bluegrass band that was in Brevard, North Carolina. She said, there's a bluegrass band that works here. Remember, this is now 12 or more years ago. And they said, oh, they'll come over. So they came over. And I thought, at first I thought, oh, yeah, right, a local bluegrass band. And I thought, gee, they're really good. And I was really impressed with the big sound, you know. And then I was slowly getting back into the banjo. I had just sort of played it privately for a long, long time. And I had this thought to kind of promote or be the, you know, master of ceremonies of a banjo CD with like, you know, collected songs. Not for me, just I'd play a couple and then I'd say, well, this have somebody else, people I'd like to. So I'd represent, you know, sort of introduce this music to people. And then I realized, wait, I've got enough songs that I've written through the years. I've got a dozen songs, so I could just record those, and I could do a little banjo album, music album. And I thought, okay. So I got together actually with my friend John McHugh, and the Rangers weren't involved then. This was actually before I was teamed up with them, and I made a record called The Crow. And it won a Grammy, by the way, I think.
Yeah.
And so... Wait, I'm not sure if it won a Grammy. I might have been Rare Bird Alert. The one of them won a Grammy somewhere.
You've got Grammy. Yeah. Grammys, yeah. Multiple.
Actually, it was a Grammy for a comedy album. I don't remember. So so my agent said, he said, well, now you've made the record, you have to go on the road. I said, what? I haven't been on the road in 30 years or 25 years. And he said, well, that's how you do it. You got to go on the road. I said, I don't even have a band. He said, there's two ways to do it. Either you hire a band, individual musicians every time, or you find a band who already exists and they'll tour with you and either they're available or not available. I said, well, I only know one band, Steep Canyon Rangers. I said, okay, I'll hire them. So it was a total fortuitous connection that I made with these guys, and it turned out to be fantastic. I think they've really contributed to my growth, and they have been naturally growing through the years into an incredible band.
You mentioned John McHugh, and, mm-hmm. and that goes back
to high school.
Yeah, and it also goes back to your early love of banjo.
Yes, well, you know, I was growing up in the 60s, and it was all folk music, and there was the Kingston Trio, and Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I would just hear that banjo in the background. I go, what is that? What is that? You know, and I literally could, you know, part the other instruments so I could just focus on the banjo. And my girlfriend in high school, her father had a banjo. I was 16, and I borrowed it, and I didn't realize his was a four-string banjo, and what I wanted to play was a five-string banjo, which is a huge difference. And
there's one more string.
Yeah, one more string, and it's only half a string.
Right.
If you look, it's just half a string. And then someone said, well, there's a kid in high school that plays a banjo. I said, who's that? John McHugh. And so I contacted him, and then we became really good friends, and he taught me a lot of stuff, and I got a banjo, and that's how I started off.
And then as the story progresses with bated breath, then his brother actually worked with you and managed
His older brother, William McHugh, was my manager, and John McHugh helped create the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and they're still playing today.
And the first time I ever had the pleasure of seeing you in one iteration of your career, you took the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band out with you because you're a guy who, when you respect and believe in something, you advocate it.
Actually, that's not true, but go ahead, yeah. No, I actually opened for them.
Yeah,
they
that's
were
not
nice
how I
to
remember
me.
It.
I'm the one who screwed them after I...
I'm trying to remember now, Steve.
But it was funny because I didn't want a rock band to open for a comedian. I thought it was really hard on the audience after their ears have been blasted than to listen to, good evening, you know.
The banjo isn't an instrument that most people would zero in on, and you did, and for a while, a good long period, you took it very seriously, and you really worked on your craft.
I take it very seriously, but you know, I tour around with Marty Short, and one of the jokes on our show is I say, you know, there's a big difference between the banjo and the guitar. The banjo has a round head that's stretched with skin or plastic, and it amplifies the sound going out, and the guitar can get you laid.
Like I said, my crowd, more of the guys opted for a guitar. Go figure. You've watched the evolution of the banjo,
mm-hmm.
how it's gained respect, how it's grown in this world, and also concurrently bluegrass music mm-hmm. itself. What have you observed throughout?
Well, when I first started playing in the 60s, there were a lot of fine banjo players who the king was Earl Scruggs, who really determined how the banjo was played from 1945 to at least today, although there are now branches that have taken off from that. Sorry, I lost track. So when I started playing in the 60s, the level of the standard average player was right about here, you know, good, solid. When I'm for the radio audience, I'm indicating right here, right? It's right here. And then when I came back into it, I still maintained I'd do a movie and I'd sit on the set and learn a song and something like that. But when I came back into it after the turn of the century, the average level of the banjo player was here. And now for the radio audience, I'm here. It's up here. And I was astounded at the level of musicianship. And, you know, that's why I had to create my own style. Because I couldn't really keep up with those incredible players.
Well, you have, you know, we've been fortunate enough at KCSN to have a number of bluegrass artists come through, many of the young ones. I remember recently the Punch Brothers.
Oh, they're incredible.
Came by and mm-hmm. they talked about your generosity and your dedication to helping them in any way you could, including letting them crash in your guest house.
Well, we do have a guest house and they...
Did
and
they trash it?
No. Okay. We're actually quite honored to have them stay there. And, you know, Chris Thiele says, this is very inspirational. We can write music here. And I go, oh, I'm so excited. You know?
Hey, he hosts Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah.
He's a
good guy, a master right now, right? Musician. Our mandolinist, Mike Gugino, we were doing a show one time, and he was going on after the Punch. We were going on after the Punch Brothers, and he was backstage like this. And I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Well," he said, "I've got to follow the greatest mandolin player who ever lived." I thought, "Yeah, you might be right."
Mm.
Yeah,
tough act.
Yeah.
Let's look at the title, The Long-Awaited Album. Kind of wrote itself, didn't it?
I think it's ironic.
Is it?
Well, you know, I was talking to my agent one time, and I was talking, he's a great guy named Mark Geiger, very smart about the music business, and this was like a couple of albums ago, and we were talking about how to promote it. And he said, just remember one thing, you're selling something no one wants.
Mm.
Now, he meant CDs, because the business has changed, you know, so much, but I took that to heart. You know,
that hurt a little for a moment.
You know, if I didn't put out a record, no one's going to be going, I can't believe he didn't put out another record. Oh, man. So, you know, this was kind of, I thought it was a catchy title and also kind of not true. And I am so enthusiastic about the record and the music, you know. You know, I like it when people hear it and because I know it's not in any... genre that, except for the small slice of maybe bluegrass fans and people who like comedians who sing.
Yeah, I didn't remember seeing that category in the record
it's
rack.
It's not there.
The I was thinking when you were mentioning the K-Tel albums, mm-hmm. I was thinking perhaps that this was a subliminal message that you were trying to get across with the title, the long-awaited album. I have been waiting for this album. For
yeah, exactly. Steve. Yeah. Well, also,
you're a clever
I
man,
also
Steve.
Have a thing that people actually might believe it. Oh, it's out. Oh, yeah. We got to get that because it's long-awaited.
See, this guy thinks everything through. By the way, on that topic, you know, I was kidding with you. First of all, backstage, we were actually in the other room. No. Backstage.
I'd die for a backstage.
Yeah, we you had to have a lamb in it to get back there. We were joined by Tony Visconti and Perry Farrell. And so I'm sitting here watching Perry Farrell and Tony Visconti engage in a really intense conversation with Steve Martin. And I thought, this is a KCSN night. I feel it coming together. That was fun.
It was incredible. I mean,
and he got an invite to play Lollapalooza while we were at it. So
the offer was too low, but
that's what Mark Geiger's here for. We'll get him to handle it.
I think he walked out of the room going, "What did I just do?"
Well, it's now going over the radio, so it's there for a document. Peter Asher.
Yo.
You worked with Peter on this record? He produced?
Yes. And, you know, Peter Asher, in case you don't know the name right off, is a great producer who produced not only the long-awaited album, but Linda Ronstadt and James Taylor, and the list goes on and on and on. And he was also a part of the big hit duo in the 60s, Peter and Gordon. You know,
and a legendary record man, as we like
yes,
to say.
Yes. And you know, he they sang, had a big hit on "World Without Love." Goes like that, and it was
sing it again because
I was oh no well
was that the hook
yeah no, okay.
right. Oh, now I remember.
Yeah, you got it. And I was so fascinated to hear his history, where he was a young man, and his sister's Jane Asher, who was the girlfriend of Paul McCartney, and they were staying at the house.
I'm sure there are some women here who wish that they probably a lot of, how many women here resented Jane Asher in their lifetime? My wife did. And my wife didn't like Jane Asher at all. She wanted to be Jane Asher. Did you ever come across Peter in your early days in Los Angeles?
I don't think I did, no.
Really?
No.
I would have thought somehow you were.
Yeah.
Now, that's something we haven't even talked about, the fact that you are, in fact, a Southern California native.
Yes.
Well, you were born
I was born in
Texas,
but then I came here when I left Texas when I was five, leaving behind a wife and two kids, and I came here.
That you know of.
We grew up in Orange County, California. And it was great. Folk music. By the way, that was a big folk music center. There were all these folk clubs. And I used to see all these wonderful acts, starting with the Dillards, who changed my life. Doug Dillard, the great banjo player.
I went to school in Athens, Ohio, and there was a huge bluegrass scene, and the Dillards came through a few times.
You always
times.
Have to top me.
Athens.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway. Now, I had another follow-up. Oh, yeah, right. California, that thing. You got this hankering to be in show business, and whilst you didn't get the job following the elephant, you know that old story.
Well, actually, why did you come up with that? Because I did follow an
what?
Elephant. Yes. I mean, I hate to tell the story. You can cut this out.
No, go
But
on.
I was opening in Sparks, Nevada, for Roger Miller, the great folk country writer, songwriter, sweet guy. I liked him so much. And he said, call me when we're done. Call me sometime. So I had his phone number, and I waited a couple of weeks. And I called him. I said, Roger, it's Steve Martin. And there was a pause. And he said, what's my dog's name? And I said, Charlie. He said, hey, Steve, how you doing?
So
that was a security
password?
Check.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I did follow an elephant, an elephant that did tricks, and I don't even want to tell you this, but before the elephant went on, you can cut this from the air if you want, I don't know, they had a huge sort of Q-tip.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and they didn't want the elephant to poop on stage, so they had to go in there with this Q-tip, and I'd be there with my banjo. They're cleaning out the elephant. So I have lowly beginnings.
What? Yeah. And leave showbiz?
Yeah, right.
So you worked at a place some of our friends here. Was it Knott's Berry or Disneyland first?
Both. Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. And you started to work some magic into the act.
Yeah, though that was when I was about 15. I worked at the magic shop at Disneyland. So I got pretty good because when you're doing magic tricks 8 or 10 hours a day. And this was, by the way, I started at Disneyland when I was 10 selling guidebooks. I keep thinking, like, where were the police? You know? Although I loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing that ever happened.
How much cotton candy do you think you consumed in your early years?
Well, they didn't sell cotton candy. It was, you know, it was all fancy stuff, popcorn.
Oh, yeah. Caramel corn and stuff like that.
Balloons.
Did you get all you could eat as an employee or just a discount?
No, I was an unofficial employee. I didn't actually work. I worked for what they called lessees, who rented space in Disneyland.
Yeah. Do you still know any magic tricks?
I used to. I don't do them anymore. But
Can you turn my interview into something interesting? Anyway,
no one can do that.
Hey, come on now. You and I promised each other
we'd dealing carry, with the wrong material.
We'd carry each other through this one. You do have for those of you, I happen to have what they call an advanced copy.
Mm-hmm.
It's here.
Mm-hmm.
It has, as he's told us, 14 songs on it. Should we listen to one?
Sure. What do you want to listen to? Want me to play something? But let me explain something. I'll play something that is on the record. It's hard because I'm playing a solo banjo and I sung a couple of tunes, but I can't do that without the band. So I can just give a demonstration.
Yeah. It's okay, right? You're all right with Steve picking a little for us.
You have to understand. There are. I'll do this quick history. Two types of banjo playing, and one is called clawhammer. There are more than that, but one is called clawhammer, and one is called three-finger or scrug style. And three-finger is what you play on that banjo with a resonator, a big sound, real true bluegrass. And clawhammer is more folk. It goes back into the 19th century, and it has a completely different feel. Both are emotional, but this has some kind of quality, like melancholy quality.
Before you start, could you remind our listeners on the radio that is that banjo and this?
Yes. Obviously, I want to point out I'm talking about that one. I'm not talking about this one.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm just trying to keep it straight.
Let me just check the tuning.
Talk amongst yourselves while Steve tunes. I didn't hear anything interesting. I guess we want Steve to play.
This is a variation of a song that's on the record, but on the record it has instrumentation with the other...
other stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about how a couple of times we've referenced being in the 60s, and all of us who were there, we forgive you for any moments that happened.
No, it's fine. It's I was so into it too. That was so weird.
You were. You were engaged, and we were engaged, and it's fun. Here's an idea. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'll agree with me. This is all, we're just, work with us, because we're just, he decided earlier on, I was going to be the earnest, reverent guy that only focused on music, but he told me to lighten up. So when Steve Martin says lighten up, you gotta lighten up. Should we listen?
Absolutely.
To the album version of that song to see how
well,
good
actually,
you were.
Well, actually, there's
doing
another one that would be better.
Okay,
if I could do that one. But now I'm afraid. But I'll play a song that would be good to play, a song called Canadian Girl, which I wrote as the instrumental version of a song. I didn't know what it was going to be. And then we can listen to how it evolved on the record.
That would be fascinating.
Called Canadian Girl. And then you can listen to, this is how the song came out. And I'll just preface it. You say, well, how'd you come up with Canadian Girl? And I'd been spending a lot of time in Canada my whole life. And I had just been working in Canada. I thought, let's start there and see what comes out.
Well, we're going to hear the version off the long-awaited album.
Lake Loclair in Ontario, sailing on the Labrador Sea, travel by train, Victoria, BC. If you come across the line, I'll make you my Canadian girl. Hope this reaches you in time. You're inclined to change. Of Seattle and west of Spokane, settling down, a newspaper writer, a model, good neighbor, a proud journeyman. If you come across the line, I'll make you my Canadian girl. Hope this reaches you in time. You're inclined to change your mind. Toronto and back to LA. Leave you north. wonderland, changed the life of this American man. If you come across a line, I'll make you mine, Canadian girl. Hope this reaches you in time. You're inclined to change your mind. Won't you be mine, Canadian girl?
Lyrics.
Thank you. You know, what we really should also talk about is how he got to this record, because, you know, I did an album with the Rangers,
right,
and it was, you know, we were really pleased with it. But then I teamed up with Edie Brickell, and we did two records and a musical. And during that time, you know, Edie was the lyric writer, and she was so good, there was no need for me to write any lyrics. But I did it in the background, just doing my own little tunes, and we toured with Edie. So there was the Rangers, Steep Canyon Rangers, me and Edie touring around. So when the musical came to an end, I thought, I'd like to get back to that a little bit and reestablish my relationship with the Rangers. Not the relationship ever was bad, but the you know, the working together. And so we started doing this again. I started dragging out the lyrics I'd written through the years, and then wrote some new tunes too. I'd say 80% of the lyrics I write are all about a breakup.
Really?
And I don't know. I think it's only because I find that so interesting.
Or has it happened that much?
Breakups have automatic emotional content that everybody understands. And I wrote this song called Caroline, which we were promoting over there. And it really, I thought, discusses every bad thing I ever did after a breakup. You know, every lousy thought, you know, every mistake, and I tried to get it all in one song. Do you want to play that song, Caroline?
Yeah, why don't we?
I sing this one. By the way, the previous singer of Canadian Girl was Woody Platt with the Rangers. This is me. I don't sing, I talk. I talk a song. Yeah.
It's Caroline.
Tell me why you left me standing in the parking structure, Caroline. I was the almost perfect boyfriend ever for you, and you even said that to me one time at the Olive Garden. Please return my car and leave the keys inside the glove compartment, Caroline. Are the hardest thing I'll ever put behind me. Never thought you'd leave me stranded, not a glance into the rear view. I'll be looking for someone who wears her hair exactly like you, and who swears a blue streak when the Tar Heels lose the quarterfinals. Caroline, Caroline, oh 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 Caroline. If you ever find another, please don't put up on Facebook. I would rather think I was a deep regret you can't resolve. If I have a drink with someone, I will tell her all about you. That will be the big mistake that I will make on my first date. Caroline, Caroline, oh 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 Caroline.
that we could not have lasted. Daily life cannot be that intense. I'll phone my friends and try to explain why this past year I have acted so insane.
You know, a banjo and a fiddle can make even utter heartbreak sound okay.
Oh, you know, one of my most emotional songs that I listen to is on a record called Flat and Scruggs at Carnegie Hall, and there's a song called Fiddle and Banjo, and it's just Earl Scruggs and Paul Warren on fiddle playing a two-instrument song that I kind of think in some ways changed my life. You wouldn't know it from listening to it, but just the sound, the emotional sound of the mountains of America, I just affected me. I thought, and I still can't play that song.
Well, you've got time.
I said at my show, I said, you know, this song, I really love that song. And I said, so I really wanted to write a song for fiddle and banjo. Because I thought, why should I pay him royalties? So,
tell you, starting back at 10,
you
had a gift, my friend. Let's talk about 10, you know, because I don't know about you guys, but I thought I mowed lawns at 7.
Well, I just got lucky.
I like to, you know, it's one up. Said,
hey, they want kids to work at Disneyland. And I was 10.
And you get them free.
How do I get there? Tell me.
But it shows a work ethic. It's a work ethic that you obviously.
No, it's working. It's going to Disneyland. That's not a work ethic.
Well,
it's the opposite of a work ethic.
Following the elephant, you got to at least say that.
Okay. That's something else.
But. Now you have. Let's. We'll get serious for a moment. Well, I think we are serious at least once so far.
We've been serious.
Yeah, some. You really have, you know, and when I said it earlier, I thought about, there's a lot of people that are hyphenates in Los Angeles. This guy, he's been an acclaimed artist in so many fields. What drives that?
I'll tell you what, I don't think of it as many branches. I think it all comes from the same thing, love of comedy and music. And love of comedy is writing. You know, it's like when I started out, I have to write jokes. And then I thought, I accidentally got a writing gig on Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. I have to learn to write. And then you start thinking, I'll write my act. I'll write these sketches. And then you start applying that information from how to write a sketch and think, well, maybe it could be a screenplay. Then you think, gee, I wrote a screenplay. Maybe I can write a play because I've been in front of the audience. I know what that sounds like. I know how. And, you know, it just evolved. But it's all just aspects of the same thing that look different but aren't really.
But there is
contradict me.
I'm abetting your thing and saying there's a storytelling component that is really essential.
Definitely,
to it.
And I find that most realized in music and the songs. I realize maybe it's safety. I always like to tell a story. Maybe we should play a song that has an example of that.
Hmm.
I'm trying to think of there's...
Do you need the record to remind you?
Well, yeah. Oh, am I on this record?
14 songs worth.
Yeah.
And it's on sale, by the way, on September 22nd, for those of you who don't know yet.
You'll never play this on the air, but...
don't challenge me.
You want to listen to Nights in the Lab?
Why not?
And you know, I wrote this melody, and I started, you know, thinking, I wonder how it would go good. What would be the lyrics? And I wrote something like, maybe it's you, you know, some like stupid thing. And I looked at it, that's not what I want to write about. What do I really want to write about? Two scientists working in the lab. So this is that song.
True love.
Because I love science.
We are two biologists. In the lab we coexist. We process biogenesis and stare into a petri dish. in the lab, we're working late. You hang your coat and take a break. While you're gone, I celebrate the photo on your laminate. Sandwich in the sun, talking of bacterium. You have a lovely collarbone. Evening comes, we're all alone. Mix some sulfur iodide, check to see it's purified. No gorillas in the mist, working side by side like this. Antelope, you smile a bit, you clear your throat and compliment my anecdote. We share a compound microscope, our face is close, I feel there's hope. We analyze a spirochete, accidentally our lips meet.
Now, I have to point out that I happen to play two songs I sing on, but most of the record are actual competent singers from the Steep Canyon Rangers. Yeah.
I thought you handled that beautifully.
Well, thanks to Peter Asher.
Well, you know, he's got to earn a buck. Speaking of beautiful and you know, being serious, there's a song on the record that I found to be really, you know, heartfelt. I hope that you share that feeling. Would you mind if I make a request for a change? Because people always
sure.
make requests for me, and I will play them.
Okay.
All right. If I make a request, do you think he'll play it back there?
Well, you know, hey, you're the boss.
Let's give it a shot, right? All Night Long. Beautiful song.
Oh, thank you very much. That's to me one of the strongest songs on the record. But you know, there's certain you don't play albums in sequence and then they sort of go by. But I actually really do like that song.
Would you guys mind if I because it's a
you know
very,
I'll
pretty
tell
song.
The where
go
that
ahead.
Thing came
Set
from because you know I have a 5-year-old daughter. Well, when I wrote it, she was 4, and I was on the road a lot and going away, and I thought of that. It's actually. Became a song about a romantic relationship that is, you know, people spending time apart. But that was the genesis of it. It was going away and feeling that longing. But then I morphed it. I said, I don't want to make it about my child. I'll make it about a romance.
Well, it's a beautiful, I hope you agree, it's a beautiful piece. Could we hear All Night Long?
dashboard light, a Voyager and air at night. All year long, life is such a sweet soiree. I offer up this expose. I only love you in the day and all night long. Here we go again, so far away. Here we are again, let's not turn away.
I don't want to bore the audience by playing too many songs, but there is, you know, there's a couple of, I think we could play maybe two more. Is that,
yeah, exactly.
What time is it? Okay, it's only 1 a.m., so, you know. I thought what's interesting, like, at least I can discuss it, was On the Water, which,
yes,
seems to be the FM choice,
yes,
of a song that the FM would like to play.
That's the radio smash,
yeah,
babe.
The radio smash. And, you know, today it's possible for me to have a smash just by saying it is. So, yeah. So I'm just declaring it
a smash. It's going viral as
we
speak.
It's like everybody here's rapt.
I think it's going to be the top streamed song overnight in Los Angeles.
It's definitely going to be the top song in this room, I have a feeling. So, yeah. And the other song I thought was about, unless you have something else.
Oh, no, no.
Was the song Bad Night, which, mm-hmm, is a song I really like to get. These two songs, I like to get specific. Bad Night is about the exact moment someone, in this case a guy, understands that his relationship is ending.
Mm.
And it's always that subtle turn that you can't quite put your finger on. That's what that song is about. And we'll discuss On the Water after that.
Right.
Unless you want to talk some more, we can.
No,
do that.
No. But, yeah. You set that up great. Have you thought about another career and perhaps in radio?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Well, you know,
you could do it from my car. Actually, it'd be good. Yeah. So this is a Bad Night.
Dropped you off, bad night, at the door, no invite. Driving slow the long way home, expect a call, it doesn't come. On my porch, tune my guitar, look for rhymes, but don't get far. So sorry that you shut me out. Now what's this song about? I guess I overthought the day you turned to me and looked that way. Standing in your summer dress, I could have sworn you meant yes. So many times I've looked at you, so many songs that came on cue. Now I try to feel figure out just what this song's about. It could have been a happy tune about us dancing on the moon. It could have been a sweet romance about a night in Paris, France. But now I'm feeling so washed out. What's this song about? Writers can be full of doubt. They write to get the sadness out. They send postcards when they are dead from poems they leave inside your head. Tonight it's hard to find the words that make sense of what occurred. Forgive me while I figure out just what this song's about. Tonight it's hard to find the words that makes sense of what it could. Forgive me while I figure out just what this song's about. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm applauding for you.
Pardon me? Oh, thank
you. I'm applauding for you.
Thank you.
It wasn't anything
to do. Weren't applauding for yourself?
Yeah, I wasn't being self-congratulatory or anything like that. Well, maybe a little. Yeah. Just a little. We were talking about the bluegrass situation, which I'm sure many of the people in attendance are aware of the great website and periodical that the bluegrass situation is and how we like to partner with them on certain things. And you mentioned that you had an experience with the bluegrass situation that inspired to start to honor.
I can tell you almost exactly when it was. It was 8 years ago, and I was just getting back in the bluegrass scene. I'll make this short because I know I don't want to go too long with the people, you know. It's boring. I was at the bluegrass situation over at the Largo Theater, my wife and I, and we were, this is when I came back in, I realized that the level of musicianship was so high that it was, to me, comparable to classical musicians. And I was backstage, and I was watching a player play just backstage, and I thought, wow. And he was actually playing with Graham Sharp, the player, the other banjo player in the Steep Canyon Rangers. And I was watching these guys do it, improvise, etc. And I talked to the one player, and I talked to him, and I found that he was still paying off his banjo. And so my wife and I went to him. I said, "What if we gave a prize, cash?" You know, so we came up with a $50,000 prize per year to the player that we selected, a board of top level banjo players. And one of the reasons we selected this board of top level banjo players is they would all be deserving the prize. So it'd just be, oh, there's 10. So we had to eliminate them, and we put them on the board, which was good because we could get young players and new players and players that this award would actually help, so it wouldn't be a legacy award. And so we that's what we've been doing. And the first winner was the banjo player I watched, Noam Pokelny.
See, this is when we started out and we talked about how he is truly an evangelist and a real supporter of the form. And for that, I think you deserve a round of applause.
Oh, thanks. Just, well, you know what? It's actually really fun to do and really find, discover these players, or, you know, you hear them by word of mouth, or, you know, we've got a nine board member. Bela Fleck is on it. Noam is now on. Tony Trischka, Pete Wernick, a lot of, and scholar, Allison Brown, who's a fantastic banjo player out of Nashville, and she runs Compass Records, I believe. And Neil Rosenberg, who's a scholar, a bluegrass music scholar out of Boston.
Very.
Yeah.
Sure, you get a credit. Well, this has been, what a treat, right? And all of you coming tonight, I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you very much for coming. I really appreciate it.
Can we give it, really, he deserves as much love as we can afford.
Oh my God, a standing ovation. I can't believe this. Oh, it's a standing ovation. Oh my God.
Look how many people.
Wow, and how many. Oh my God.
They really love you. Except Eileen.
Eileen never showed.
Everyone, 922. No. It is the long-awaited album. We ask that you add it to your collection. if you want to throw a few bucks into the basket, that's always welcome. The guys, you know, helping support a whole genre by himself. So, you know, we can afford $8-9, you know, to show it along.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. It's Steve Martin, ladies and gentlemen.